You're listening to In the Moment on SDPV. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, South Dakota Governor Larry Roden announced that the state will enhance crime and drug enforcement and support ICE. Operation Prairie Thunder is billed as a sweeping immigration enforcement initiative. It enlists South Dakota resources, state troopers, the Department of Corrections, and National Guardsmen to assist ICE. Our Dakota political junkies join me with their analysis in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the Dakota Scout, and Tom Dempster is a former South Dakota state senator. But before we get into immigration, Tom Dempster has a point he would like to bring up.
Excuse me, Lori, but before he answers that question, I have a bone to pick with Mr. Ellis.
Uh-oh, here we go.
I mean, I know he works 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, just like you, for sure. But he wrote a story, and in the story, he referred to reporters as a gaggle of reporters.
A gaggle?
Yeah, so I sent him a text message, and I said, it's not a gaggle of reporters. It's either a murder of reporters, like Murder of Crows, or a parliament of reporters, like Parliament of Owls. But it is not a gaggle of reporters.
Explain yourself. Why, if they can be crows and they can be owls, why can they not be geese?
That should be self-evident.
He retreats into the corner. Nice job,
Lori. Let's unpack the linguistic history of...
Well,
is it because of the nature of geese?
No, not at all.
No, okay.
A parliament, you presume, is wise. Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly think that reporters are wise,
and
right?
Crows?
A murder of crows? Mm-hmm. Reporters sometimes can be very dangerous. So be careful.
Gaggle
and watch
sounds
out.
Harmless.
So it's, yeah,
and
gaggle. Yeah, gaggle is just a bunch of cawing and squawking and cracking all that sort of stuff. I argue for sure parliament murder.
Now we have clarified this.
Okay.
Mr. Ellis, explain yourself.
He got his way out of the corner. Nice job, Tom.
Thank you.
Will you take this into account in the future? Do you think you perhaps need to rethink whether or not gaggle is the appropriate connotation you want to give?
Sometimes
readers?
We have to choose our words very carefully, but sometimes when you're in the heat of writing something on deadline, it's hard to do that. So I will in the future.
Yeah. You're never going to type it again without thinking.
True.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you regret writing gaggle of reporters?
I do not.
You're retracting or correcting?
No apologies whatsoever.
I mean,
there's no remorse whatsoever.
No.
Come on.
No, you can have lots of regrets in life, but I'm not going to over that
particular
word.
That one.
Yeah.
I think well said, though. Think about word choice matters. Clarity of words matter. E.B. White is in the house, and
Indeed.
He's letting us know that those distinctions matter. Speaking of words, I was reading the press release for Operation Prairie Thunder when it came out from Governor Roden's office, and I was wondering about some of the language, because I live in the city of Sioux Falls, and this is going to be piloted in Sioux Falls, and they were talking about National Guard helicopters being put into use, and I had to take a moment and think, do I know everything that's happening in Sioux Falls? Because that seems kind of a lot. I don't know that I feel like I live in an unsafe city. And the governor is saying this will have an immediate, significant impact on public safety. So my big question is, will Operation Prairie Thunder have an immediate, significant impact on public safety? How will we measure that? And what else is going on here? Because we're also in, a race for governor at some point. So, Jonathan Ellis, let's start with Operation Prairie Thunder and tell me what you saw in some of the communication from the governor's office and some of the questions that came to mind for you.
Well, I would say that this is one of those situations where a thing can be two things, right? And it's policy and it's also politics.
Mm-hmm.
And let's be very honest, the immigration issue was probably the number one or number two issues in the presidential election, because after 4 years of just extreme immigration across the southern border, a lot of voters got fed up with it. So from a political point of view, if you're somebody who might be thinking about running for governor, as in the current governor, it's probably good politics to look like you are contributing in some sense in that immigration issue. And these law enforcement agencies that have sort of rushed to get this 287G endorsement from Immigration and Customs Enforcement so that they can assist in at various levels in immigration enforcement. You've seen that happen. Hundreds and hundreds of agencies have flocked to do that since President Trump was reelected.
Now I'm listening to every word he says. Flocked.
Uh-oh,
rushed.
Here we go.
Did they rush to it? Yeah.
That's what you
did
get.
Did they rush to the 287G, or have they been part of this the whole time?
That's what you get. That's what you get when your business is having a pen in your hand.
There were. This program came about in the first Trump administration. Yeah. There were roughly about 140 law enforcement agencies across the country that had gotten that authorization. The Biden administration stopped it. No authorizations were given. And the Biden administration didn't go as far as what some immigration activists wanted and just to terminate the contracts, period. But then as soon as Trump is reelected, so then you had, I mean, red states all over the place. So this is a political issue.
The dots started filling in on the map really quickly website for people who were signing agreements.
Yeah. Right. There were no agencies in South Dakota that had participated in the first administration. Now we have several, I think it is. Yeah. And from a policy perspective, you can say that there are a lot of drugs that come through South Dakota, especially Sioux Falls. We intersect by two major interstates, 29 and 90, and if you talk to law enforcement, they will say, these are conduits for a lot of drugs. So does it help in that sense? Possibly. I'm not in law enforcement, but I think some people in law enforcement would say that it might.
Yeah, which we'll circle back to, like, how do you measure the outcome here in a minute. Tom Dempster, Operation Prairie Thunder, what were some of the first things that you were looking at to evaluate this initiative?
I feel like I'm on the South Dakota State Senate floor, having to stand up and oppose a bill promoted by someone that I like and have a great deal of respect for. But I don't have any choice but to do so. When I hear the word Prairie Thunder, I think shock and awe. Prairie Thunder and shock and awe, I think, has mostly to do with essential workers that that the governor's press release called criminal, illegal aliens. Just 4 years ago, we used to call them essential workers. Now they're criminal, illegal aliens. I think most of this had to do with ICE enforcement in South Dakota. I'm sure we'll have the opportunity to talk about that for sure. But one of the things that I know is I'm a former county commissioner, spent 9 years on the county commission and was head of the South Dakota County Commissioners Association. And one thing I know for sure, if there's any natural predator to government, it's any and every other entity of government. And what that means is that governments are always fighting for funding. Governments are always fighting each other for influence. And I'm going to expect, and Dory, I don't know this for sure because I haven't talked to the chief of police. I have not talked to the sheriff. I have not talked to the mayor. But I'm going to guess that the mayor, the chief of police, and the sheriff were there without enthusiasm. Law enforcement is a very prideful thing. It's very much of a fraternity. The last thing local officials, not to mention county commissioners or mayors, but the last thing that local officials want is a higher government, by the way, that funds you, is a higher source of government saying, we think that you're ineffective, but saying that we can take responsibility for success in law enforcement in Sioux Falls. My guess, and I could be absolutely and totally wrong, my guess is that is met without enthusiasm.
I have asked the Sioux Falls Police Department if they intend to pursue that 287G status, at one of those levels, and they've said no. Now that's several months ago. So I would agree with Tom, what he's saying, that they probably, they're not, there's not enthusiasm in Sioux Falls. But I would disagree a little bit, because a lot of law enforcement agencies do want that added, you know. And I would say also that a lot of law enforcement agencies participate in very in federal drug interdiction programs, drug crimes against children programs on the internet. So, I mean, there are always varying degrees of local law enforcement participating with federal law enforcement.
Collaborations, yeah. I might say that any law enforcement leader goes to any press conference without enthusiasm.
Yeah.
It's not their best, you know, it's not their best days. Hey, we get to go do a press conference today.
I'm going to guess that's probably right.
You're probably safe on that, that bet. Sheriff Mike Milstead was on the show, you know, to your point, Jonathan, when you asked them, and, you know, he did not have any intention for his field deputies to be doing immigration work, and he explained very clearly what the role was within the jail of ICE holds, and that's always been happening, and it's really, really increased quite a bit with the new administration.
Yep.
How do you measure its success, Tom, then? How does Governor Larry Roden measure its success? How does he talk to the people of South Dakota, particularly Sioux Falls, about its success? Is it just an numbers? Because here's what I'm really wondering. Like, you can give me numbers of, like, how many people you've, how many arrests you've made. But then doesn't there have to be a public safety
result
impact?
Of that,
like,
for
if
sure.
You've told me I'm going to be safer, telling me you've arrested 150 people doesn't necessarily make me feel safer if the crime rate doesn't go down. So are these two things tied together?
Because
your point, essential workers are not necessarily, there are people who are here without status who have committed violent crimes. And there are people who are here because they've crossed the border illegally and or they've crossed the border without permission and they're removable. But that's not necessarily going to change the crime rate in Sioux Falls because they're not committing any crimes. Most of them are not committing any crimes. So how am I measuring success?
Well, that's a good question. If for example, to be clear, I think that the Prairie Thunder has been, they are targeting specific, they're targeting criminals. They're not targeting what Tom calls essential workers. They're targeting criminals. DCIs and Marty Jackley.
Do they say that, or they say they're targeting anybody who's here without status?
Marty Jackley has been very specific in saying that, for example, DCI agents are going to be used specifically for violent criminals.
Attorney General Jackley has said that.
And obviously, if you're using the Department of Corrections to identify people within the prison system, by definition, they've committed crimes.
They could be there.
Right?
They could be there for the, I mean, Sheriff Milstead said, you know, crossing without permission
not,
is a
not
crime.
Not in prison.
But that could be in jail.
Okay,
but that could be their only crime.
We're talking about the Department of Corrections. So the Department of Corrections, with going back to Governor Roden, we're talking very specifically about people. If you're incarcerated at the Department of Corrections, you by definition, you've done something very serious. Okay? I mean, most people, low-level offenders are not going to prison. Okay, so by definition, if you're using the Department of Corrections, you're using Highway Patrol, you're using for looking for those specific people.
So
I don't
how are
think
you measuring success?
They're not. That's a good question.
How
I mean,
do you
are
the public
deportations?
Safety?
I mean, maybe that's the deportation numbers. I mean, what I want to know is, are they going to have a metric to measure success? Yeah. Like, what would their metric be?
Yeah. What's this public? What is the metric for measuring public safety?
Well,
isn't it crime?
When you're at a five-year crime, I hope that Jonathan is correct. But when you're at a five-year crime low, I don't know how you measure better public safety than what, be it a six or a 10-year crime low. But when you name something, Operation Prairie Thunder, Shock and Awe, and you've got a buffalo with sunglasses and lightning across the sunglasses, I'm going to think that this has more to do with an ICE conversation than it does with strictly law enforcement. And my fear is that all of a sudden South Dakota will become embroiled in what we've seen in other states is essential workers now being charged with the misdemeanor of having inappropriately crossed a border and having so many of these people that are so essential to what America is be deported for that one misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. That's what Prairie Thunder says to me. Shock and awe, helicopters, airplanes, shock and awe. That's what it says to me. I hope Jonathan is right. I hope I'm absolutely wrong.
Let's talk a little bit about another news story here, which is the Secretary of State and this information that was put into the world because of a law that took effect on July 1st, and it turned out to have information that you can't put into the world. Jonathan, explain to us what happened here.
Yeah, so the Secretary of State's office was required to publish a list of the registered voter list. That list has always been publicly available. It's just that you've had to pay for it. A lot of money, yeah, if you wanted the statewide list.
So who bought it before?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, political campaign. Did you buy it? You would have bought it like a legislative district. I mean, you could buy various, so you don't have You can buy pieces. You can buy it, by district. I think you can even precinct level.
And I've got a walking list as a result of that, so I know when I'm knocking on somebody's door, whether they're Republican
or Democrat,
whether they're going to yell at you or not, or whether they voted.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So you have voting history.
Which is why when people knock on my door, they always look at me like, I don't really know who you voted for because I'm an independent.
Right. No.
There's secret ways of finding
that out. And they're not going to vote on, you're not going to get primary candidates running because you can't vote in the primary, right? So,
come to my door anyway.
It's valuable information. It's been valuable for political campaigns. And the legislature wanted the information more readily available out there as sort of a voter integrity thing. They think that if it's the more transparency, and I don't disagree with that, the more transparency, the better. Unfortunately, the Secretary of State's office.
This is a case where the more transparency wasn't better.
Yeah, this was the case where, so they publish it. Now, so when you're registering to vote, there are a multitude of places you can register to vote, and one of them is if you're applying for a public assistance program. And the Secretary of State's office, this was not public, but this was part of where you apply or where you registered to vote. And it obviously gave away people who were registering for SNAP or WIC or other social services programs because it had their source of where they'd registered. So we knew about 7,700 people were on this list who had been identified as having registered to vote while seeking public assistance. And that's a violation of federal law, multitude of federal laws, and state laws protect the privacy of people who are on these programs. Mm. So obviously that was a big, the Secretary of State, and this is the legislature and the Secretary of State kind of have a conflict in a way because the exceptions to what was supposed to be published were spelled out in state law, but it didn't include that. It didn't include the source of where you registered. So, at some point, the Secretary of State's office is kind of stuck between, maybe we have to do this because, I don't know what was going through their head. They're not very, very transparent. Although I will say the Secretary of State last week, apologized and took responsibility for it, and they took the information down. Because, regardless of what the legislature's intent was, I'm sure the legislature didn't intend that. They just didn't have the have it spelled out in the rules. They would have been preempted by federal law anyway.
Tom, when you saw this unfold, what were some of your thoughts? Was there a lack of communication, a lack of awareness that that was something that needed to be exempted? Nobody had thought that through when they passed the law? From a state legislature standpoint, what went wrong?
I don't know. My guess it was improper due diligence. Whoops, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have.
By the state legislature or by the Secretary of State?
By the Secretary of State. Mm-hmm. Whoops, I made a mistake. I'm going to have to suffer the consequences. I'm sure there will be lawsuits. But the first thing I'm going to do is apologize. And she did that.
Yeah. What happens next? There will be lawsuits.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, people who are I've had inquiries from people who want the list. I mean, obviously, it was taken down. We have a copy of the original. Mm-hmm. It's been asked that everybody who had one to destroy it. I don't think we're going to do that, but we've had requests from those in the legal community who are very interested in getting that list, presumably to solicit names that were on the list who were exposed as potential on social services programs.
So a group of reporters is a murder of reporters, isn't it?
Well,
and let's hope they're a parliament of owls.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, you know, you receive information, whether it's improperly received or whatever. It's not we didn't do anything wrong, so you know it's there. And I think it's there are potential.
Or the ethics of keeping it.
I've received information that I wasn't supposed to get many times in my career. And
who was that? Daniel Berrigan?
You're not publishing it.
No, we have not. No, of course not. We wouldn't do that.
That should be clear for listeners who are.
We have not published it.
Yeah. You're not putting it out there.
No.
Yeah.
Who was that? Daniel Berrigan, the Pentagon Papers?
Right. I mean, this is.
Sure.
So.
It's a murder of crows.
The idea of when you register to vote, though, and I just can't wait to ask you this question now that it started coming out of my mouth, because I know what you're going to say. You know, you register to vote and your address is on there. For many people, whether it be a public figure, a state legislator, a victim of domestic violence, you know, somebody who doesn't want their address, a single female, who doesn't want their address to be out there, a single male, anybody, lots of people don't want their address to be published, but they also want to vote. Is there a chilling effect to having your address published because you registered to vote? Will some people say, well, I'm not going to register to vote then?
Oh, Lori, I think that there are probably 20 or 30 different ways for me to find out your address. I think I can go to White Pages and pay a fee, or go to Yellow Pages and pay a fee. And not only can I find your address, but I can find your criminal history, and I can find out all sorts of things about you. I'm not so certain that the publication of voters list, including your address, and I think your phone number.
I'm quite confident. There were phone numbers and some emails too.
Yeah, and emails. I'm not so. I mean, I can find out anything and everything about you anyway. I'm not so certain that this damages
that. That gives me comfort, though.
It shouldn't.
You know, and there are people who are trying, you know, to eliminate that and are taking steps to be off, you know, the easy access.
Yeah.
For especially domestic violence is what comes to mind.
Well, they've made it more difficult. I mean, when I say the legislature, and again, in terms of trying to what they would perceive as flaws within the voting system, have tried to like eliminate, you know, P.O. boxes or the mailbox companies that you could register to vote through, things like that, RV parks, things. Mm-hmm. So they have increased the transparency. To your point, Lori, I mean, because there might be some people uneasy about that. But to Tom's point, it's very easy to find. You can use for even modest amounts of money very powerful search engines that can find anyone anywhere. I mean, that's just a reality.
And secondly, if you're going to vote in a legislative district, you have to live in that legislative district. You have to have an address. And ultimately, a voter is going to have to come to the recognition that, okay, maybe I might a lot, or maybe I might modestly increase my threat of somebody finding out who I am and where I live. And I'm going to guess you probably have to make the conscious decision of saying, increased threat, maybe a little bit, but it's worth it for me to vote.